Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 590. It's the 20th of September, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Sasha Sethi, investor relation at Flowcoms, talks about Berkeley Energia and EVRH Holdings. Sasha's been on the podcast before, and he represents quite a few companies I hold, actually. And so we talk about two of the companies today, and there's some news out, of course, with Berkeley Energia and EVRH Holdings. Plus, full-time investor Wheelie Dealer talks strategy and stocks. Today, Wheelie talks about hedging using the VIX and also covers Horizon Discovery Group, HZD. I also have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. Huge, huge measure of sentiment. Check them out. And I've also got on the website here the week's most followed companies. No, not last 24 hours, but the week's also. VoxMarkets.co.uk/blog. I've got the most liked RNS today. I'll reveal that. And today's suggested one for your watch list is Redstone Connect. Ticker, REDS, suggested by Edward. I'll read out the reasons why Edward thinks you'd put this company on your watch list in a few moments.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sasha Sethi. Now, Sasha, you've been on before, but for people who are not aware of you, what do you do, fella?
I run an investor relations company named Flowcoms, and we look after all the investor relations and PR for a number of select companies, which I think you've covered quite a few of them because they're all doing quite well at the moment, which is good.
They are, yeah. Listen, I'm not saying I bought companies just because you're involved in them, right? But you do seem to be at the moment representing some very good companies, some potentially, and I'll name a few, Asia Met, Tulu, Berkeley Energia, EVRH Holdings. Have I missed any out?
Let me think. No, I think that's about it. There's Upland, of course, as well.
Upland Resources, yes.
Do you still hold those?
Yes, I still hold those, and I quite like them. I'm going to write a blog on Upland because I think they're overlooked. But like I said, at the moment, we've had two bits of news out from two of your companies today, and it looks quite good. I mean, it's a Berkeley Energia, BKY, and of course, EVRH. So let's go through the first bit of news from Berkeley Energia, and they are they were a uranium explorer, now moving into production in Salamanca project in Spain. So take us through the details of the deal they've announced today, Sash.
Well, the details are essentially that they've agreed to a £1 million offtake agreement with a large purchaser of uranium for a large premium to the current spot price. So it's called the term price. It's a long-term offtake, which they've signed for $41 per pound of uranium, when the current spot price is about $25 per pound, which is and the offtake now is pretty much nearly three times what Berkeley can, the cost of what Berkeley can produce at. So yeah, a very good deal.
Yeah, and this is important because they will be one of the lowest cost uranium producers in the world, won't they?
Indeed, and not only that, they're in a very, what could be considered a very secure and safe jurisdiction in Spain. So once that mine is up and running, I think a lot of uranium is produced in you know, some very frontier environments like Africa or and Asia as well. So maybe, you know, European and US utility firms certainly might like to be interested in this jurisdiction.
Yeah, and there's a couple of other things as well I like about, but like I said, Spain, safe environment. They've also, it's one of the European countries that was hit hardest by the downturn, and so they have a chronic problem with, young unemployment. And so they've got, the authorities there are really behind the project, aren't they, to get people into the workforce there. Also, their shareholder register is quite impressive. I mean, Fidelity are now hold about 20 million shares, is it?
Fidelity just added to their stake recently. They went over 6%, I think, recently. You'll have to check that number for me.
Yeah. So it's got that. It's got accessibility. It's near, Madrid, is it? Not far from it, but 2.5 hours, 3 hours drive from Madrid. So it's just impressive. Paul was on the podcast, I think, last week. And One thing that sticks out in my head about this is when they announced one of the studies updates, and they said they can achieve net $161 million net profit per year. And I thought, what? And the market cap now is, what, about $100 million? And so that in itself looks attractive, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think, as demonstrated by all the institutional interest, you know, that you've got to follow the smart money sometimes. I mean, you've got some of those prestigious institutions in the world, like BlackRock, Fidelity, we've just talked about, Resource Capital Fund, Anglo Pacific Group, all coming in, look, you know, desperate to give the company money and, you know, getting involved in offtake agreements and royalties. You've got to look, there's certainly something going on. Indeed, at the moment, there's also, you know, they're nudging closer to that first production and construction of the mine, with infrastructure being laid down at the moment, with the roads and power. So, you know, there's a lot to come. In today's RNS, Barclay have hinted at further offtake agreements. I think this is one. This one is possibly, you know, it's termed as price discovery, just showing the market what they can get. And I think they came away with very good results, you know, especially considering today's spot price. And it looks like we might be seeing more of that, especially as the you know, as the uranium price increases into 2018.
Yeah, and do you know what I think puts some people off is that. But a lot of people on Twitter and listen to podcasts are really into microcaps, and they see this as a 100 million market cap. They think it's too big for them, you know. And but yet, you know, there's been several brokers come out with target prices. I think the minimum is about £1, and as yet, looking at the price today, they're still under 50 pence. So you know, that's still nice. But again, there, so I don't understand. But anyway, let's go down the scale again. To EVRH. Now, they've announced a while back, they announced a deal with Telefonica to, I think, in 665 shops across Germany. Telefonica's Germany's biggest mobile operating unit. Now, they're a virtual reality sort of content provider, aren't they, with Melody VR. And is it music and concerts and all that stuff?
Music, concerts, festivals, all captured. Those boys, they're the new kids on the block in VR, but they're actually the only listed virtual reality company in the world. And they're listed right here on AIM. So those guys have been very, you know, they had a lot of foresight, and they've been capturing content in virtual reality, 360-degree video and sound experiences for the last 2 years. Their back catalogue is huge, and the deal today just is a very strong vote of confidence by investors who were, you know, a lot of them got scaled back massively because there was so much demand for the stock, as we've seen in the market from the after reaction market today. You know, what a reaction to a placing. It's really, really good.
Yeah, well, in fact, we haven't mentioned that the actual deal is they raised, what, 3.4 million and oversubscribed there at 1.7 pence. They're now, and the share price has gone up today 13% pretty much. It's now 2.125 pence. And do you know what? There's been a lot of false dawns with virtual reality. But I think now we're starting to see, you know, getting a bit of traction, like I said, because before it was rumoured and all people talked about virtual reality. But when you got the big players coming on board, like Facebook, you know, Google, Samsung, all these, it tends to get some traction, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the you know, when all the big names in the market are getting into virtual reality. But, you know, you can see, I mean, look at Facebook. They acquired Oculus Rift a couple of years ago for $2 billion. That was, you know, just a couple of years after that they raised, I think, $1.2 million in a Kickstarter,
yeah.
Online crowdfunding fundraise. So, you know, they've seen the future. And Google now are supplying their Google Cardboard, which is probably going to be retailing for about £15. It's already out in the States as well. All the hardware is coming in. We can see it. You know, they're linking up video games now: Sony PlayStation, Xbox, and this. You know, the hardware is there, but one thing is clear: is that there's not enough content here. So EVRH, who under the Melody VR brand, are first movers into the space, having captured quality sound and in a huge industry, which is the music industry.
Yeah, well, I remember being at Momentous Events, and Anthony, the CEO, has been on the podcast as well, but chatting to him there, and I did say then that it's one of those stocks, you don't know, it may be a false dawn, but it's one of those stocks that if there is some traction here, could turn out to be, you know, a massive, you know, riser.
Yeah.
Because, it, like you mentioned there, Oculus, I didn't realise that. So what, they raised $1.2 million, is that what they raised?
$1.2 million, I think it was 2012, and then they sold it in 2014. I might have the years a couple of, you know, it might be wrong by a year or two there, but, you know, Facebook wanted it, and that was the paid a very, very hefty price for it, you know. Now, we don't, you know, we have to be careful. We don't have to, you know, automatically think that this is going to go the same way. You know, and you were talking about, you know, getting some traction, et cetera, but certainly a very, very hot sector at the moment. And the guys have been very, very careful. They're very, very careful with their spending, and they've got this big first mover advantage and very, very deep contacts into the music industry. What's especially of note is that later on this year, hopefully before Christmas, and you know it should time very well with the arrival and adoption of a lot of these VR headsets, is the launch of the app. Now you can imagine that if they sign up some big artists for the launch, and obviously with their back catalogue too, then that's their opportunity to monetize.
Yeah, and, yeah, but do you know what, though? So I had a little message from an IT guy who's in the IT crowd there, and he's got a friend out in Silicon Valley, and in the update today, it says the proceeds of this placing will be used to drive further corporate expansion, in particular in the United States of America. And he's got a friend in Silicon Valley who they know are throwing big money at VR, and it's more a case of they're taking out companies that are in this space that seem to have some traction or seem to have some, you know, property there. So, of course, it's speculation. You know, everyone, do your own research on this.
If you let me interrupt you there for a sec, Justin, if you look at this, if you can look up online and the company named NextVR. NextVR raised, for 10% of the company, they raised $80 million. So that values the company now at $800 million. NextVR can be specializing in, their stream is sport. So they're going to do exactly the same thing, 360 surround sound and vision in sport. So it's, you know, it's to give the user at home or wherever they are the experience of actually being at these games, exactly the same as EVRH, is to give the experience of being at these music festivals. You know, you look up, you see the fireworks next to you. You look beside you, you see the young girl jumping up and down beside you. You know, and you don't have to go through crowds. It's not restricted by age, by cash flow, by location. You know, so let's say Justin Bieber's performing in New York. A user could potentially be in Australia and for $5, $25, whatever, be at the concert in their own living room. So you can imagine how big sport is. This sector is going to be very, very big. The reason that NextVR raised $80 million, I think, is because they have to pay big, big tickets up front to the sporting world, you know, to whatever. Let's say the Major League American Football will want $20 million up front so that people can, so that these companies can then go and monetize that going forward. But this space in San Francisco, in LA, in, you know, all Silicon Valley, it's very, very hot. There's going to be a lot more deals, a lot more noise coming out about virtual reality, and that is why I think the guys at EVRH have been so, they've been very clever in trying to get in there early as well and base themselves out the West Coast.
Yeah, I like the way you started off there, Sash, by saying you can see the young girl jumping down next to you. That's solely for you, yeah? All right. Now, listen, we have to caveat this both. I mean, these are two companies I believe you should put in watch list. I do hold stock in these both companies, and I think you should do more research on these companies because, you know, the reason why I hold stock is because I see potential in them. And I also think you should never buy on a spike, you know, wait for it to calm down. Because, like I said, the wrong time, people, I've done it many a time, lots of times I've bought after exciting news has been released and got spiked out. So, like I said, be sensible, do some research on the companies and take it from there. But I think you should definitely add them to your Vox Markets watch list. And, Sash, thanks for coming on. And have you got anything to add?
No, just watch the space. But as ever, be careful with all your investments and make sure you research and talk to lots of friends for just to double check your decisions.
Lovely, Sash. Speak soon, fella.
Thanks, Justin. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time investor Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella?
Yeah, not bad, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, the markets, you know, they're sort of holding up. They've rebounded yesterday, didn't they? Or the FTSE did anyway.
And, yes, strong gain yesterday, wasn't it? Huge.
I've got to say, I don't hold many big stocks, but I do hold Sky at the moment and Royal Dutch Shell. And Royal Dutch Shell, Sky, I mean, did a bit of a sell-off below where I thought was a support level, broke down below that last week. And then it jumped back up above that on yesterday, on Monday, which is quite nice.
Wow.
And so I thought, oh, there we are. It's going to go lower.
A lot of it was about the pound dollar again, wasn't it? You know, the pound had weakened against the dollar, and I think that helped yesterday. But interesting, I always look at the charts every night, and one that hit me yesterday was I'm no expert on Forex. It's not my interest. It's not something I do. But I was looking at the pound dollar chart, and I've written it up on my website, and I thought it was like it had sort of gone down for a bit, you know, the pound against dollar had gone down for a bit, and then it looks like it might rebound. It did a thing called a bullish harami, a two-day candle pattern, and it seems to me, I can't remember the numbers, but it's something like just below 130 or something, and up to about 125 or something. It looks like there's a bit of a range going on.
Yeah.
And it seems like we've been in a range for probably 3 or 4 weeks, but I don't really know about Forex, really. It's not really my scene.
but you're having a go, though. That's the main thing.
Just because it affects the FTSE so much.
Yeah, it does.
Got FTSE shorts on. It's like, well, you know, I want to see how things are likely to move, so...
So, just, do you still have your short on there on the FTSE?
Oh God, it's doing my head in, mate. Honestly, it's you know, we're in such a strange phase where we seem to have sort of rallied up to some pretty high levels, and we seem to be in a sort of a bit of a sideways, and I think there's a lot of fear around. People are thinking, you know, the market's going to tank for autumn, or are they not going to tank? And we seem to be in this sort of wiggling around phase.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you make of it? I mean, yeah, it's a really strange time. I mean, it's interesting that whenever anything rallies, you look at the NASDAQ last week, for instance, we had a strong rally. Was it Thursday, I think?
Yeah.
Big rally on the NASDAQ. But again, it couldn't break out, you know, and it looks like it might be dropping back again. And you sort of, you know, it's just so struggling to make headway. And of course, the other big issue is we've got, you know, Billary versus Trumpton. And that, you know, what's going to happen there? I mean, I think Hillary is the Wall Street candidate. You know, Goldman Sachs want her in, obviously, because they pay for her. And, you know, I think Trumpton is sort of an unknown quantity. He's perceived widely to be quite mad. And he's got some pretty, you know, a real sort of throw it up in the air policies around the economy, like, you know, cutting tax rates by 20% and things. And, you know, all these kind of things that theoretically maybe they could work. But if you did them all in a rush, it would obviously tank the economy. And how are they going to pay for the massive deficit they've got and the massive debt pile that America's run up? So I think there's a lot of worries over Trumpton getting in. And, you know, and you look at the polls, he's right up there with Hillary again, and he's got the momentum. Hillary hasn't, you know, she's the old world.
Yeah, do you know what the followers of Trump remind me of? And in an investment case, is when you know a company is bad, you know, their balance sheet is paper thin, especially in a penny stock world.
Expectations are low.
But you get, you know, the fervent supporters of the company, and they come out with a bad update.
Yeah,
they come up with a bad update, but even in a bad update, they see the silver lining. You know, see the silver, like, well, that's out the way. Anything, well, move on, sell the stock, it's rubbish. And also, well, another thing, though, do you know what I think? Now that when the FTSE is like this, I've noticed this with when I hold bigger stocks that are supposedly more safe, but yet they're always at the whim of the FTSE, you know? And what I found about penny stocks, if you want to really ignore macroeconomics, you can just do penny stocks that are reliant on sentiment, news, and momentum. You know, and they're not reliant, I mean, specific news to the company, basically on wider economy news. Now, you know, you'll see massively some big stocks taken out during the Brexit vote, you know, and yet there were some penny stocks rallying like crazy because they had news specific to them. So to a certain extent, I haven't seen my portfolio been hit at all by any wobbles in the FTSE. In fact, some of the companies I've had have performed the best over the last few months penny stocks I've ever had. I mean, I'm looking at portfolio now. I've got four stocks looking now over up 100%. And they weren't at over 100%. you know, 3 months ago. So, I mean, it's like penny stocks are almost isolated from the bigger world.
Actually, I was reading something quite recently about it, and this, if you look at the correlations, it's something like 70% of a FTSE 100 stocks movements are completely correlated with the market. So it's not the stock itself moving, it's 70% of its movement is down to the wider market.
Yeah,
if you drop down to the FTSE 250, which is the next chunk down, I think it lowers to sort of 55% or something is correlated. If you drop down to the Tiddlers, it goes down to about 25-30% correlation. So there's a tiny impact on the majority of small stocks, but as you say, individual ones obviously rally like crazy on good news and drop like stones on bad news, as they often do.
Yeah, and that's it. And as long as you're aware that you're not buying at a high or you know overly, when it's overbought, and you're buying at sensible levels, and you know the story, you know the management, you know how much funds they have, and you've got the basics there of a penny stock, and I think you can do well regardless of. Is that, it reminds me of Warren Buffett. He said he never cares about macroeconomics. Warren Buffett, he just looks at a company and essentially does research on it, and he looks for it to be, you know, a good company at a good price, you know, and that's what he goes for.
Long term,
it works out.
I think with smaller stocks, you really need to know them inside out. Yeah. I think with, stuff like Persimmon the house builder, probably all you need to know is houses are in short supply and it's a big stock and it's probably going to do well. Investing on that basis, you'd probably make money. You don't really need to know much more than that. Yeah. Whereas with small stocks, you've got to know the ins and outs of a cat's what's it. You just need to know it. And I just think, to go in with very scanty research, not really understanding the sort of growth profiles and, you got to know, and as you say, the management and stuff. I just think you're going to be struggling. Yeah, you've got to know these things.
Yeah, well, the times I've been burned in penny stocks is when I've just followed others into a hot stock.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I've done quite well, I've bought the right level. I've done a bit of research and I quite like it. And then I've scaled in. Just in case I've been wrong, that's it's been much more sensible, really.
It's almost worth with these tiny stocks. When you first hear about a story, it's almost like you got to put a time limit on yourself. You got to say, right, my rule is, I've just heard about a stock. I'm not allowed to buy any of it for 2 weeks minimum. Mm-hmm. I just have that enforced rule, and then in that 2 weeks, your job is to spend a little bit more time researching it better, a little bit more time learning how the chart moves, a little bit more time finding who the people are, really understand the stock and move it and all the rest of it. And then after 2 weeks, right, I might buy a little position to start me off, And I think that's the way to really do them. As you say, if you just, someone tips it, it spikes, you buy right at the top of the spike, then you're going to be taking a hit straight away because it drops back. Yeah.
Trouble is on AIM, 2 weeks, you can see the share price got 200%, come back down, be minus 50%.
That's exactly how it works, isn't it?
Talking about risk there, you've been looking at the VIX, haven't you?
Yeah, that's a really weird thing. It's something I've sort of come across in the last sort of couple of months. Talking to a guy on Twitter called Dave Balkin. I can't remember what it is. He's probably at David Balchin or Dave Balkin, on Twitter. Good guy. And he's more of a trader. He's very much a very short-term trader. He only has about 3 or 4 positions at a time and whatever. Anyway, he mentioned to me a while ago, because, I'm always messing around with my hedging and stuff with a FTSE 100 and with the NASDAQ 100 and whatever. He mentioned to me, you should try hedging using the VIX. And I thought, what's that? Well, what are you talking about? And the VIX is the official name is the US Chicago Borders of Exchange Volatility Index or something. And it's what they refer to as a fear gauge. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, to be honest, you don't need to know what it is. That's sort of irrelevant. All you need to know is it's the VIX and its volatility. On IG Index, I think it's called, I don't know, US Vol or something. I can't quite remember what it is. But anyway, what it is, it's a really strange animal because it sort of moves completely inversely to the S&P 500. So if the S&P 500 is rising, the VIX will be falling. And if the S&P is falling, the VIX will be rising. So it's like that. Now, where it gets interesting is it's asymmetric. Yeah. Now, what that means is, I'll try and give you an example. So just 2 weeks ago or whatever, or I wrote my sort of weekly charts of that, and I was saying, you know, this is really weird, because if you look at the VIX, it's at its lowest level it has been for 7 years. And it was down at something like a reading of 11, I think it was, maybe pushing towards 10. It was down at those very, what you would call very low numbers on the VIX. Now, the beautiful thing about it, what was really amazing, was that people were shorting the VIX. So it was right on a floor. It hasn't been for 7 years. And people are shorting it because they think volatility is going to reduce. That seemed really unlikely to me. I thought, blimey, you know, it's much more likely volatility is going to increase as we come into autumn and with, you know, the elections and God knows what else. Anyway, so where it gets interesting is that when the VIX is down at kind of level of 11, yeah, or towards 10, if you look at the chart of it, your downside risk is fairly limited. In that, okay, is it going to drop to maybe 8 or 7, maybe? So you could lose 20-30% on that particular trade, yeah? But, you know, volatility is never going to go to nothing, is it? That's pretty obvious. Because if it goes to nothing, that means the S&P 500 flatlining. So no point any of us trading shares. So, so the downside, when you're at those kind of low levels, is very, very limited, right? Now, where it gets interesting is that the upside, when it decides to get in a move, is massive. So to give you an example, when it was at 11, yeah, it took a couple of days or whatever to go up to 12 and then to 13, right? So you're already talking, you know, big percentage gains in a couple of days, really. It then jumped to 20 in a day. And that's what it does.
Yeah.
So you go from 11 to 20. That's like nearly, well, it's probably, what, 80, 90% gain in one day. It's absolutely mental.
So are you are you trading this?
Not yet, but okay. I am seriously thinking of it. And what I've found is that IG index, you know, spread betting, to the volatility index. And first of all, I looked, I thought it was £100 a point minimum. Yeah, I thought, oh my God, it's going to be absolutely massive. It's going to be like 170,000 quid exposure. I thought, that's going to be nuts. But when I actually did a dummy trade and it works out, well, I didn't put the trade on, I just checked the margin requirements and stuff. And it works out that it's £100 per sort of complete point. So like 17 to 18 to 19 is just £100 each jump. Yeah. So in fact, if you put on a long, you have to go long, not short, because it's inverse. Yeah. So if you go long the VIX at 11, right, that would be equivalent exposure at £100 minimum to £1,100. So it's pretty tiddly exposure. Yeah. Your margin requirement, I think, is 12.5%. So on that is going to be around 140 quid or something to keep the position open, yeah? The deposit side of it. But like I said, the upside is mental. So.
But what I don't understand, let me ask you a question, though. I don't understand. I wouldn't do this, right? Because you can get that kind of upside in penny stocks, and there are some decent companies, you know, and the penny stock, but yet you end up, you know, at least you're holding an underlying asset there, and whereas trading is a bit scary. I mean I'm not a big fan of trading because it can wipe you out, you can lose more than you put down, and so why wouldn't you go for like a penny stocks and do some research on a company rather than do that?
Well, in this case, we're talking about hedging a portfolio.
So
the idea is, I've already got my stocks, I've got my massive long portfolio of collection of stocks, and obviously, if I was to do what you said, it could be right. It might hedge a tree, but, you know, just as likely it'll probably drop and add to your problem if markets are falling. What I'm trying to do is protect the overall long portfolio against general market falls. And the thing that's really attractive about the VIX is that for a very relatively small outlay, because of the gearing, you can effectively hedge a much larger portfolio. So let's give an example. Let's say you had a really small VIX put on, which was a couple of grand of VIX. You could probably hedge as much as, say, 10 grand or more of long portfolio exposure. So it's that asymmetric geared nature that makes it really interesting. Okay. I'm going to experiment with it. You know, next time I see it down there and whatever, I'll give it a try and I'll write it up on my website and we'll see how it goes, you know?
Yeah. Keep us updated on that.
Rubbish.
See how it works out. Listen, I know we're going to talk about investment clubs. We're running out of time, so we'll do that next time. You were looking at a stock you said quite interesting, an update.
One, this is one that came on my radar because actually one of the fairly new guys to investing. He's been doing it a couple of years. I think his name's Paddy Spud on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Interesting guy because, as I say, he's quite new to it. But do you know what? He's one of these guys who's shrewd and he's picked up the sort of name of the game pretty quick. He obviously sees what more experienced guys are doing. And he picked up on this company, HZD, Horizon Development or something.
Yeah, Horizon Development. Yeah, I know there's
a while. Yeah, it's one you know really well. Yeah,
yeah, bespoke sort of, isn't it? Medicines and stuff like that. Sort of, yeah,
I don't really know much about it. I got the impression reading the sort of blurb today in the RNS that it's like sort of DNA sequencing and analysis.
Yes,
based in Cambridge, Boston, whatever. But the thing that struck me about it was, like I say, Paddy's been in it, and he's not an idiot. So I thought, maybe there's something in this one. If Paddy's interested, let's look at it. So I had a quick read of the RNS, and it really was a quick read, so I don't know a lot about it. But what hit me was that you look what they're doing in terms of their revenues. The growth had gone from, like, I don't know, 3 million last year to 10 million this year or whatever it was. And the forecast was to jump to, was it as much as 25? And where it really got interesting was they said there's a lot of operational gearing. And you can see that with the way that the losses are dropping. Yeah, they're really coming down fast. So you can see a situation. They said they're going to go EBITDA positive in 2017. And then they said they'll move into proper profitability not long after that. So it looks to me like the trajectory of the numbers is really good. Now, obviously, I know nothing about the company. Needs to be sussed out. The market cap, I think, was about 152 million when I looked. And obviously, it's difficult to value things, you know. But it's something to look into. I don't really know much about it.
Yeah, do you know what? They were on my watch just a while back. I mean, I'm talking about a year back or something when I read an article in Investors Chronicle about them. I quite liked them. And they basically tailor-made, solutions via DNA, you know. So, it's very interesting. And
it's a
very
hot area, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very hot area, yes.
The chart's quite interesting because when I first sort of went to look at, I bet you it's a chart that's been shooting up for 5 years and it's, there's no point of even looking at it sort of thing. And when I looked, actually, it's one that floated, it shot up, then it's dropped back and it's got into this sort of sideways thing. So maybe it's in that situation where the chart has calmed down a lot, the interest has waned, people have, gone away from the original story. So it could be something to look into. It's not one to put £1 million on, it's a small investor's sort of small investment kind of thing, really. But I just thought it looked interesting and worth considering,
Marvellous. Cheers, fellas. HZD. Worth a look at. Thanks very much, fellas. Speak soon. We'll talk about investment clubs next time, yeah?
Yeah, next time, mate. Brilliant. Yeah, speak to you later.
All right. Here are the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website the last 24 hours. They are at five. It's there again. Management Resource Solutions, MRS. That's Mrs. A new entry at four, Global Energy Development, GED. I know nothing about that company. At three, Talao Energy, TLOU. Very strong today again. At two, we cover them with Sasha, EVRH Holdings, a virtual reality company. And at number one, I think for the second day at trot, it's Sepura, SEPU. If you want to see the top five most followed companies for the week, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Okay, the most liked RNS today is from Andalas Energy. Got the most thumbs up on the website. And it's about the appointment of a non-executive director. By all means, if you want to read that, go to ADL on the Vox Markets website there. Right, today, suggested one for your watch list is Redstone Connect, suggested by Edward. Design and installation of smart buildings. That's what they do. 1.6 billion shares in issue. Current price to market cap, 1.7 pence. Market cap, 27.6 million. Revenue, profit and loss. Final results for the year ended the 31st of January 2016. Revenues from continued operations up by 36% to £40.1 million. Gross profit from continued operations up 35% to £7 million. Apparently, first reported restructured company due any day now. So they restructured the company, and this report is due out. How much cash or debt does the company have? A year-end cash, $1 million. And they disposed of a loss-making telephony service division for $2.5 million in cash. They raised $2.1 million from new equity, and they got no debt. Of course, on all these companies suggested on the podcast, please do your own research just to validate what I'm saying here, because I can't be held responsible for any inaccuracies, because my head is full of them. All right, there's three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. That one, astonishing client reference list, clearly very successful in execution. Two, high-tech capability, niche market leader, apparent high growth. And three, relatively unknown to investors and therefore probably very undervalued. So that's Redstone Connect, and that's R-E-D-S, ticker REDS. Check it out. Edward says you should add that to your watch list. Thank you very much for listening. By all means, get involved here. If you know a stock that you think should be on people's watch list, if you think is, you know, undiscovered, essentially, and undervalued, then I can give it the ear of publicity right here. Thanks so much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.